This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Shouldn't you be at work?
Oh, here's Gascoigne. Gascoigne, he can finish it here! Phil Gascoigne! 2-0!
Lampard! Brilliant!
It was in, no!
That surely crossed the line!
Oh,
it's so far in!
Thanks very much, Sepp Blatter.
Clean sheet, I call it. It's one of the most important things in football.
Nice to see the whole fans booing you.
Emil Heskey, could it be five? Yes, it is!
Paul Bowden to take it. Oh, and he's hit the crossbar!
Gerrard, it's Carroll! What a goal by the England striker! That's why he was brought in, and he's done the job.
Saved! John Pickford! England are on the brink!
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, and it happened!
No!
Quick leg!
Hello and welcome to Quickly, Kevin. Will he score? It's the Euros Awards. Are we over the Euros? We're about to find out. I'm Chris Gold. Joining me, as always, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And this man is to the Euros 2020 Awards what Billy Crystal was to the Oscars in the 90s. It's Michael Martin.
Hello.
How are we?
Billy Crystal was all over the Oscars in the 90s, wasn't he? It was just pure wall-to-wall.
He was great.
More so than films.
Yeah. I've watched every single year since 1996. I stay up, I take the Monday off work, and he is very sorely missed.
Really? Was he your best ever Oscars host?
Oh, he's amazing. He was the delightful Billy Crystal. He's just so good. Those opening intro links and montages that he would do were just highlight of the film calendar.
Well,
there we go. If you wonder why I'm so quiet, it's because I can't even open the emails. That's how much I'm struggling to get back into life after the Euros.
Why don't we get into things with a bit of correspondence?
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the Electronic Postbag.
You've got mail.
Okay, well, it's all very exciting, isn't it? The old world of halftime energy surges.
Oh,
are we excited about more information on halftime energy surges? Because here it is from Matt Parry. Hello, gents. Great podcast, by the way. Just wanted to let you know the huge halftime surge in power usage is not down to additional kettles being boiled, but the extra demand on water pumps as millions of toilets are flushed. I used to work at the National Grid. There we go.
Wow.
All that mystery, all that myth.
That makes so much more sense. Way more people are going to the toilet than having cups of tea.
Yeah.
But also that toilet pumps are electric. It's just a mechanism in the cistern, isn't it?
No, but I suppose your boiler, well, it's not even a boiler, is it? Yeah.
Do you flush your toilet with hot water?
I feel it does a better job.
Are you that upper class?
It does a better job. Obviously, that has, if anything, made it more complicated and I know less about the situation as it was. However, Adam Wood writes, hello all. I would, in hope of lightening the mood after the weekend and following on from last Wednesday's episode, please see attached the energy usage during England v Denmark from the Western Power Distribution LinkedIn page. Why this is slightly better than the previous one that you had is that it shows the normal usage versus the usage that day. Also breaks down into regions, showing a much bigger halftime spike in the East Midlands. whereas there was a much bigger spike in the West Midlands at full time. Explain that. South West obviously doesn't like tea as much as the Midlands, or obviously shitting, according to the other guy.
They're shitting.
As the spike, there was nowhere near.
I can only view the surge now in terms of people shitting.
Can you?
It's got to be, isn't it? It makes complete sense.
Okay, well, we'll put a couple of these on our Instagram, but I'll just give you an example one. This is the West Midlands. It's a really lovely piece of graph. I can't wait to publish these on our Instagram, which is at Quickly Kevin, all one word. So this is England v Denmark's power distribution versus the previous day.
Wow.
And what I find interesting about that is it does peak at half time and at full time. But overall, the power is lower throughout, apart from a brief moment at full time when it overlaps. So essentially, the football is meaning less power is used. Because in my mind, it was like, how are they going to deal with the power that they don't even, they've never experienced the power of a full time before? But no, it means there's less power being used.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I'd love to know why that is. Because I would assume, well, I mean, I guess people are doing less activities around the whole house, perhaps, like it's all concentrated on one.
Yeah, exactly. I think people are stationary in front of their TV, and a lot of people are out, a lot of people are at the pub, whereas they're not
flicking on all the lights in their house. They're in one room or at the pub. Do you know what, as much as talking about like usage being down, when I drove over to your house, Josh, to watch the final, I'd left it quite late, and I was like, oh, we're gonna get caught in traffic, this is gonna be a nightmare. It was my fastest ever run to your house.
Of course it was.
In about 10 minutes. Of course, there was no one on the road. It was a ghost town.
It was like 28 days later.
It was exactly that.
I wonder what it would be like walking, what it would have been like to go for a walk at 8:30 on Sunday night.
Well, you did it for the Colombia game in the 2018 World Cup. You walked out in the middle of a penalty shootout.
Yeah, there was no one about. There was no one about. Absolutely no one about. All you can hear really is the roar of pubs, the occasional roar of people in the pubs.
Oh, good times.
There we go.
I'd love to hear, like, just to be in the middle of London or in a field somewhere, could you hear the country cheer when Luke Shaw? You know, I'd love to be in just random places in the middle of a park somewhere, just hear the sounds of London or the sounds of a city as Luke Shaw scored that goal.
Well, Alex Brooker said to me, he was at Wembley, he said it's the loudest he's ever heard a sound.
A sound.
When Luke Shaw scored. He said he's never heard anything like it. One more thing on the power. This is from Alex Mount, he starts by thanking us for the podcast. He says, "Now the real reason I'm emailing toilets. I thought of your podcast the other day when I learned that not only does the national grid surge at half time, but reservoirs lower because so many people go to the loo and flush. Someone on James O'Brien, who works as a project manager for a water company, even said they cancelled planned works as a result of the Germany game because water levels were too unpredictable."
Wow. It's tied to the toilet usage, isn't it? Everyone's been banging on about cups of tea. They were hiding the dirty truth. And the nation dumps en masse.
Such a British thing to do, to be causing problems because you're shitting, but so embarrassed that we blame it on cups of tea.
Do you think like they were trying to look into why the energy was surging? They went, yeah, it's cups of tea. And someone went, no, wait, I think people are shitting. No, it's cups of tea. Don't stop.
We love tea. Look into this
It's tea. Shut up.
Player regen, another one of our top topics of the tournament. Adrian writes, I am surely not, and he's not the only person, to say that Kasper Schmeichel is surely a regen of Peter Schmeichel. The only difference is that Kasper's aerial ability and positioning are 20. would you buy that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's less fun, but I absolutely buy it. Although what I will say is the stats don't change. So technically, if you're going to have a bit of fun at Peter Schmeichel's expense, it doesn't service the joke, mate, all right?
Can I just say also, oh, sorry, I can't find your name, but thank you for emailing in. You do remember the Ronaldo, what was he called?
Ronaldo Vieira.
Yeah, Ronaldo Vieira. Someone emailed in to say that his twin brother is called Romario Vieira, and they were both born in 1998.
That's lovely. That's really nice.
Really nice. Do you want some positivity?
Yeah.
Go on.
Hello, lads. Nathan Drew. I'm surprised that Chris hasn't brought this up, but he's being followed by, on Twitter, I'm just going to send you the screen grab.
I know exactly who this is going to be.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's the little blue car, the little car from the Euros.
You are followed by you are followed by the official account of the tiny football car.
And the little car tweets, has been tweeting me. You're right. Why haven't I brought this up? Do you know what it was? Because about halfway through the tournament, after the little car had disappeared, I tweeted, I still think about that little car all the time. And then someone added the little car, and the little car like waved at me. And then the little car was just tweeting me. Tweeting me a couple of times.
God, he's not going to sleep with your little car.
Right, but you know, I will say this. It's not the little car, guys. It's a marketing ploy. I know.
Oh, my word.
I know. Also, how's the little blue car verified and I'm not? It's been on the scene 5 minutes. We've been doing this 4 years.
Do you want to end this with a good omen? Terence Davidson. Hopefully it's not too soon for your heartbreak to let you know there are great omens for England's chances of winning. World Cup 2034.
How many years ahead is that?
This year is the fourth time a Euro or World Cup final has gone to penalties. In 1994, Italy lost to Brazil. 12 years later, they won the World Cup, beating France on penalties. 12 years after this, France won the World Cup. The only previous time it happened in the Euros was 1976, when Czech Republic beat West Germany. Obviously, there was no World Cup 12 years later, the next closest being 1990, which, as you know, was won by West Germany. Having lost on penalties, England are now on a lock for 2034.
68 years ahead.
I mean, yeah, it's unlikely we're still going at that point, but we should probably do a kind of reunion special if it does come around to that, and we'll see.
There's a slightly dodgy piece of maths in the omen, just so you know.
Go on.
Right.
He's gone, so 94, he's gone to 2006, right, which is correct. 2006, he's gone to 2018, which is correct. But West Germany, 1976, he's gone to the nearest World Cup, which is 14 years. Really, he should go 12 years, which is Euro 88, which Germany didn't win. It's almost like it's not a science. Thank you for all of your emails throughout the tournament. It's been an absolute joy. Keep them coming because we'll be back soon. In fact, this is how to get in touch, and then we'll tell you what we're getting up to.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list @quicklykevin.com.
So this episode, our Euros awards, which we weren't planning on doing, but we did feel you can't end in the way we ended. You can't end on that note,
no,
can you?
No.
So this is a bonus episode that we felt would bring a positive end to the tournament. Yeah. But it brings to the end our Euros marathon, which was genuinely a pleasure to do for you. I hope you've all enjoyed it. And we'll be back in a few weeks with a new series. We're just going to have a few weeks to regen, and we'll be back as Romario Skull and Casper Michael. That worked much better than I thought it was going to. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, but until then, there'll be all the usual episodes out on Patreon. We've got Gary Mabber, and also we're going to do a film club this month about the Roberto Baggio biopic. What's that called, Michael?
I think it's just called The Divine Pony, or Baggio, The Divine Ponytail.
Of course it is. That's all it could be called. So we're doing those
Josh, did you just say we're doing Gary Mabber?
No,
you just said I'm doing
it. Did I say Gary Mabber?
You did say Gary Mabber, and I was just like,
what are you trying to say?
Sorry.
Are we doing Gary Mabber?
What I mean by that is Steve Barnes. The Steve Bruce, Steve Barnes books. Can't tell you how tired I am after the Euros. Also, in that time, before we start again, we will be sending out the 3 bits of merch that are coming out now. And also on top of that, Michael, it was too much during the Euros, wasn't it, to manage to do this? Let's be honest, we didn't understand what doing three podcasts a week and editing them would involve, did we?
Yeah, it was, although it was fun and one of the best summers of my life, the workload was insane. So we had to put a pin in the proposed Championship Manager Euro 96 tournament. However, it is coming. It's going to fill the gap between this episode, which is the end of the Euros, and the start of the new main series. So keep an ear out. Everyone who's a Patreon will be eligible to take part, and the draw is happening very, very soon.
Thank you for bearing with us. We'll be honest with you. We didn't quite understand the effort of doing three podcasts a week. It was fucking intense.
But glorious.
Intense but glorious. And we really enjoyed it. And we loved all your emails. And thank you for all the nice comments, etc. We could say this now. We'll be back in Qatar, won't we?
Oh, 100%.
It's inevitable. It's inevitable.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
And me and Michael have one eye on an outside broadcast there, maybe around the quarterfinal semi stage. Eh?
I think, yeah. Double check what you're doing legally in Qatar, because I don't want you to never come back from Qatar.
What a way to go down.
Well, I do not want you to anger Be In Television or whatever it is that Gray and Keys are on as pirate broadcaster.
Yeah. Imagine getting put in the slammer and then you hear footsteps down the corridor as Keys and Gray. Oh boy, we're off down the dungeon.
Yeah, what you hear played for a boombox is the jingle to I've Got the Keys that we made, just announcing his arrival.
So that's what we've got planned. Thank you so much for all your support. We couldn't genuinely have done it without you. And we wouldn't. It would have been insane. Now, we come to Chris Skull's End of Euros Awards. Chris, can we have some awardy music, Michael?
Right. Here are some awards. We'll just go through them one at a time. We'll discuss who's going to win.
Okay.
Each one. The first category is player we will never hear of again. Who would like to go first?
Who are the previous winners of this? I suppose Toto Scilacci has got the lifetime achievement, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Who are we going for? The one that will just... I think Poborski would have a shout.
Yeah. Well, I'll pick first if that's okay.
Okay.
Because I think there's a Poborski link in that. I think this is a nation that has provided...
I'm going for the same pick.
I
think we're going for the same guy. Okay, fine. And I think, for me, he's the new Milan Baroš. Like, it's a nation that has provided a lot of players at major tournaments that are then signed for often a Champions League club for far too much money. Within a season, they've dropped down the pecking order, and then they're shipped off to some mid-level European club, or, you know, Sam Allardyce signs them. For me, that person is Patrick Schick.
Yeah. Yeah, got it written down right here. I'm looking at the words.
He's absolutely done a grand slam.
And I tell you what, if one thing could seal this guy to oblivion, it's the fact he's linked with West Ham.
Is he linked with West Ham?
If we pull this off, this is the most accurate award ever given to anyone.
Yeah, for 40 million. From Bayer Leverkusen, you're going to pay, and he's going to get 7 goals in 1.5 seasons before he goes back to the
three of those 7.5 goals. 3 of those 7 goals will be in the League Cup.
Yeah,
in a hat trick in like November, where people go, "This is it. He's found his form." Okay, what's the next award, Scott?
Okay, next award is game that was the biggest waste of 90 minutes of your life. Now,
England Italy in the final.
Do you think? No, I've actually picked an entire team here. Maybe I'll go first.
What do you mean? A team?
Every game I watched these play, I was like, oh, that wasn't very good. Match. Yeah.
I thought you'd picked it player by player. No, the most boring potential to the left back.
The
I didn't
worst
enjoy
team
watching.
Of the tournament.
If you've done that, Skull, I'm here for it.
The team that I just, every time they were on, I was like, oh, this is a rubbish game. Austria. Do you think every Austria game was just like, oh, this is rubbish?
Yeah, I can't even remember any Austria games, really.
Macedonia. Oh, well, they won. Yeah. Oh, God. So many bad matches. Holland, yeah, they got done by Holland.
Lost, yeah, they lost 2-0 to Holland, and they beat Ukraine 1-0. It was, yeah. I see where you're coming from. They don't really have a sort of that plucky underdog vibe about them, Austria.
Yeah.
You can't buy into them in the same way that you would another nation at a similar level.
Yeah.
For me, as a whole, I've loved this tournament. Before I started, I said, I'm going to make a vow to watch every minute of every game. And I did it, not live. I did some of it on catch up, but I have seen every minute of every game.
Yeah.
But the second game of the tournament, which was 2 o'clock on the 12th,
Wales,
was Wales versus Switzerland. And it was a 1-1 draw. And that really made me question my life choices. Because not only was the game like really poor, it also felt like, partly because of the format of the third place teams going through, it just felt like nothing was at stake. Yeah. Luckily, that feeling was few and far between over the rest of the course of the tournament. But it was one of those ones where you go, oh, I think this might be a shit tournament.
Yeah.
It's the only one that I look back and go, yeah, that was a slog.
I think it was a great tournament. But my choice is I didn't get to watch nearly as many games as I'd have liked to. So when I did, I got a Wednesday afternoon, and I was like, I'm getting to watch an afternoon game on a Wednesday. This is like unheard of. My daughter was at nursery, and my baby was asleep, and I watched Finland 0, Russia 1, and it was so gutting. I'll tell you what it reminds me of. Like, if you've got your pocket money, and you spend it on the wrong album, and you're like, oh God, that was my one album I could buy this month, and I've fucked it. I totally fucked it. I watched Finland v Russia. How has that happened? Okay, next category.
So we're getting now, as we'll assess some of the broadcasters, but I wanted to give an award for the best VT. For me, it was the VT that they played at the start of the Ukraine game, which I think was the BBC's reflection of England versus Germany. It is absolutely sensational.
You sent it to me earlier, and I can say it's a different class to any other VT I've ever seen a TV company do. Because normally it's just, you know, the game set to meaningful music, but it is a phenomenal journey through the history of the rivalry. Brilliantly done.
And they found like clips of like Sterling when he gives the ball away to put Muller through, and then like someone comes up behind him and pats him on the head, and they've intercut that with like Bobby Moore patting someone on the head in 66. How they've created this VT is sensational. We'll pop it on our Instagram so you can take a look.
Yeah.
Kevin.
What I will say is it was eerily similar to what we did with our Germany game and our coverage of it. So, you know, I'm not saying they were doffing the cap to quickly, Kevin, but I'm not saying they weren't either.
We need for Qatar, we need to think of ways for VT editors who listen to drop a little Easter egg in that just nod back to us.
Yeah.
We need to, like, a bit of footage or a piece of commentary that no one would spot, but we would all know. You'd be, like, let us know you're in our gang.
So let's talk about the next award, Skull.
Best goal of the tournament. What are you going to give it to, Josh? Want to go first?
Obviously, context is important. So it's between two for me. So it's between Luke Shaw in the final, because I don't think there's anything more glorious than wing-back crossing to wing-back to volley home after 2 minutes of a final. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But in terms of iconic, I think it would be... And he's very much having a night where the covers will be him holding six Oscars, but Patrick Schick might actually get a second award here. He's very much the Titanic of the evening, isn't he? In that he, I think the long shot against Scotland, it's so iconic already in my mind, because it just sums up a situation where just Scotland just can't get out of the group for love nor money in these major tournaments. In the same way we can't win, and whatever we do, we lose in a kind of hilarious way, the same happens to Scotland just in the group stages. So I'd say Patrick Schick's goal, well, A, it's obviously an amazing goal, but B, you know, it's also got great context, I think.
And I think the way that Marshall just collapses into that netting. Oh, yeah. We've said it before.
All the net stuff is just beautiful.
It's a wonderful icing on what is already a very lovely cake.
It really makes you go, come on, Neil Sullivan. You bet he gave nothing to catch that ball by David Beckham.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Neil Sullivan, actually, on reflection, he does make that goal seem less good, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's just like, Like, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
I thought exactly that about the David Seaman and the Ronaldinho goal. I think I'd have less bitterness towards Seaman if he sort of like half garrotted himself in a test to clear it. But he just sort of like the fact that he, as we've discussed, lays down like a sort of a catalogue model. He just sort of so relaxed about it all. So I want to see him tangled up in that web, just humiliating himself. Because then what you do is you go, I'm less inclined to blame him. I'm just so amused by the spectacle of this that I can almost forgive him immediately.
Do you know what? Hang on, we've been criticising Schmeichel a lot for getting lobbed. But David Seaman was also lobbed a lot.
Yeah, he was. Like,
Naeem. His reaction to the Naeem lob is to basically do what Frank Leboeuf did. He cocks an arm up and just lies like a playgirl centrefold on the goal line, having just been lobbed.
Yeah, Seaman and Schmeichel, who are the best two goalies of the time, but the same Achilles heel. What's your best goal, Scott?
Got to give it to Patrick Stick, but you're right about Luke Shaw. But from now on, I'm just never going to feel comfortable if ever the team I support score early on. In fact, if in big England games, I'm going to be wanting it to be 0-0 after 5 to 10 minutes.
Close out the first 10 minutes, and then we can play on.
I know. Trippier against Croatia, Shearer against Germany. They're hard. Shaw scoring that goal is going to be a hard to watch memory now, because we will remember how we felt in that moment, and know that over the ensuing hour and a half, it all went wrong. Oh, man. But so for that reason, and because it's funny to see the Scottish demoralised in their own home ground, I'm going to give it to Patrick Stick.
Who are you going to give it to, Michael?
Similar choices for the same reasons. So I think Patrick Stick is the sort of the best goal technically. And it was one like, fuck, did you see that? But
yeah,
purely on an emotional level, the second goal against Germany, just... A goal has never affected me as much as that. And I include Champions League final in 99 because we just knew we were going to win then. We knew we were going to win then. And context is everything. But it was also, you know, being in the stadium, being with friends. Like, it was such a perfect kind of Hall of Fame day that 1-0 up, you're like, great, this is great. But you just couldn't let go of the sense of we might blow this still. And the moment Kane scored that goal, it was just... bedlam. It was just a pure relief and outlet of emotion that I've never experienced from a goal in a football match in my life.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go for that one.
Do you know what? Michael's given such a good answer there. He's changed my mind. He's right. That Kane goal was that there was so much tension released in that moment. I think it's one of the best goals I've ever seen live. Incredible. You're right. How can you give it to anything else?
Well, that's, do you know what's happened there to carry on the Academy Awards theme, is that you guys read out Patrick Schick like it was La La Land. And actually, I've come on stage and gone, no, it was sorry, guys, it was Moonlight. It was Harry Kane. It was Moonlight.
Should we talk about best match?
I'm not, like, because you could go through the whole thing on emotion in the way that Michael did with the best goal. I'm not going to go with, even though England v Germany was my greatest ever experience at a football match, it's not the best match ever. Do you know what I mean? It's not the best match of the tournament. I'd like to nominate, really, I know this is a slight cheat, but I think you have to nominate best afternoon into evening as the Spain-Croatia followed by France-Switzerland.
Oh.
It's surely the best run of two matches in a day ever at a major tournament.
Wow. Yeah. Great.
I think that's a great shout. I had picked France versus Switzerland as my game of the tournament. Mm. Actually, that double header, it was like back-to-back Champions League semi-finals that delivered on the football, on the hype. Like every narrative, mini narrative, overreaching narrative played into both of those games. It was amazing. It was like, how can you watch games like this and not love football?
Yeah,
totally. I just picked the France versus Switzerland game, but what an afternoon, you're right. That France-Switzerland game had it all. The last, again, they were 3-1 down, weren't they? The Swiss got into the last 10 minutes, pulled it back to 3-all, then win on penalties. Mbappe missing that. What an evening that was.
And I think this is slightly the... So, you know, when we watched that England v Germany montage, he showed at one point, it flashed up, Waddle, Southgate, the big name players that missed against Portugal in 2006 you never think about. And I think the reason it gets attached to Southgate or Waddle or even like Saka or Sancho or Rashford is these are players that aren't the biggest names on the pitch. And so actually, that's when a penalty shootout feels cruel. When Mbappe misses, it feels hilarious. Do you know what I mean? When the biggest player on the pitch is the one that misses the penalty, I think that's the best thing that could ever happen in a penalty shootout. It's the perfect player to miss.
Yeah, totally. And you always want, you're just rooting for the underdog.
Because it doesn't matter to him. He's still the best player in the world. Do you know what I mean? It's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, totally. Should we talk about our player of the tournament?
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Mine, I don't know whether this is a controversial choice or not, but my player of the tournament is Calvin Phillips.
Yeah.
I thought he was absolutely incredible.
I mean, I wouldn't have guessed it.
I thought he was incredible. The fact that he has gone from, you know, the championship to playing in the biggest or sort of second biggest football tournament in the world and absolutely delivered every single game. Never stopped running, never stopped shielding the fence. He's always hustling. But also, the thing that really topped it off for me was when Saka missed the penalty. And then there's footage of him sprinting from the halfway line to get to Saka immediately as the sort of Italian players like run. They're not running sort of at or through Saka, but they are sort of mobbing the goalkeeper and going past him. And at that moment in time, he probably felt like the loneliest and most isolated man in the world.
Yeah.
And you've got a guy whose first instinct is not, fuck, we've lost the final. It's like, I'm going to make sure he's okay. And it just made me sort of like well up, and it made me feel things about the sort of squad and his team and the sense of community and loyalty. I was like, oh yeah, I love that. Give me that over a creative fair, you know, an Mbappe all day long.
Good pick.
Good. We are getting dangerously close to analysing the final again, which I'm not prepared to do.
I'll worry about mine then, because mine is another. I'd like to go for Jordan Pickford as my player. Oh,
yeah, nice.
Yeah, because I think he was, obviously there was doubts about him. I think he was absolutely didn't make a mistake throughout the tournament. I don't think he can be blamed for the Denmark free kick. And if he can, it's marginal. He kept five clean sheets in a row. And then in the final, let's be honest, the Italy goal was off a wonder save from Jordan Pickford.
Yeah, that save was incredible. It was like Gordon Banks against Pele. Yeah. The ball was behind him.
The reason he deserves this is because of anyone in the final, Jordan Pickford deserves to have won it, because that was an astonishing save where he got unluckily punished, and he saved two penalties in the shootout, including from Jorginho, to win it, which is an incredible achievement again. So I feel like Jordan Pickford, of anyone, deserves to have won the tournament and been on the winning team. And for that reason, I've chosen Jordan Pickford.
Do you know, I don't know if you've seen this, but you know, just before Jorginho took that penalty, there's cameras zooming in on Pickford's face, and he's saying to himself before he saves the ball, no problem, no problem, no problem.
Yeah.
And then he saves
him. Man.
He saved two penalties in a penalty shootout.
Chris, stop yourself. Who's your player of the tournament?
You have just to come Modric with a trigger warning when you're talking about the final.
Just choose like Modric or something. Like Ronaldo, he scored lots of goals, and then we can all move on.
You remember that Fast Show sketch where the guy, the artist, is like, whenever someone black, says the word black, it just triggers him and he has a full on meltdown. That's what I'm going to be like. I'm going to walk through life, but someone could just mention to me Jordan Pickford, oh, that's it. I'll send me off the cliff into mania.
Right. Who's your player of the tournament?
I've actually gone for Gianluigi Donnarumma. So,
no.
Scam.
I just thought, I know.
We know what you think. Right. Best kit.
Yeah. Do you know what? I've gone for the Italians.
Know what you thought. It deserved. It's fine. Let's move on.
I've gone for the Italians because it's just a classy kit, isn't it? It's just really nice. I don't want to say
this. It's true, but it's a beautiful kit.
Just, the gold writing is just sublime.
It's a glorious kit.
It makes me sick. It's really good.
Do you know that? I love the Italians, though. I know we lost them, but up until we played them, I was like, I love this Italian team. And there we go. And they've got the best kit. And that's for the players and for the management team.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I back you on this. Michael, for the hat trick?
I mean, interestingly, I've bought four kits from the tournament. And I wondered if you guys would be able to guess like which four.
North Macedonia. England?
England, obviously. I don't love the kit, but, you know, for the memories.
Yeah. Italy.
Yeah, Italy home, which I agree. It's just such a classy, deep blue. Like when you look at the detail, there's this really nice, like intricate floral tile motif in the stitching. It's beautiful. I love it. Hands down, I think that was the best kit.
None of the others jumped out at me. Is it Spain?
Did North Macedonia have a funky kit?
They did have a funky kit, and I nearly bought that one, and I still might. But the other two,
that's a fun one as well because they've not been in it before.
Yeah. And I do like a sort of, I've got a lot of kits, and I do like a sort of rogue hero or villain style kit that are often vilified, and then 10 years later you're like, oh god, I wish I bought that kit. I bought the Portugal away kit, which is the
the green and white
with the hoops, which I think is absolutely splendid, and I think is a future classic no matter what people say. And the other one I bought is the Finland home kit. I don't know if you remember that one.
It's basically the flag.
It's basically the flag. It's got kind of like Peru kit, you know, the Peru sash. Like it's a really, it's simple, and I did need a new white top for five aside, but it's a really, just a really, really lovely, clean, simple design. But yeah, for me, Italy is the winner all day long.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Which brings us on to our final award of the evening, the award for best channel. So here we're considering who is the best host, who had the best pundits, who had the best commentators. Who wants to go first? Michael, you go first. What are you thinking?
Well, I think it's easy, isn't it? It's no contest on every category, and it's the old lady herself, the BBC. Old auntie. I think, you know, Lineker is just a very, very smooth, classy broadcaster, as you'd expect when you've been trained in the shadow of Des. Although a friend of mine did point something out, I don't think we've talked about it, and I think he'll want to remain anonymous because he does work in the industry, but Lineker sits like he's always hiding an erection. Once it's been pointed out to you, and I'm going to send you a grab. I don't have a grab from the Euros, but I have a grab from a Champions League thing, which illustrates it. But once you've seen it, you will never not see Lineker this. And it's like, so I've sent this through. It's like he's got an erection in class and he doesn't want the teacher or his classmates to see.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Does it all the time. We'll put it on the Instagram. So, you know, have a bit of fun next time you're watching Match of the Day or BT Sport or whatever.
He's had a nightmare with, like, body parts and bodily functions at big tournaments, isn't he? He shat himself in his early 90s. He's been hiding a boner ever since.
Best commentary team?
Well, I would pick the BBC as my best channel, but the problem is, because I do, naturally, I will always default to the BBC through, you know, in a way you support the BBC as strongly as you support West Ham, Manchester United and Plymouth. Do you know what I mean? It's ingrained in you from an early age.
Yeah.
But in reality, the best commentary team was Ali McCoist and Clive Tildesley. I thought Ali McCoist was phenomenal. I thought he's the best. I don't know how he hasn't been doing that for the last 20 years because he's the best co-commentator there is. And then I will always love Gary Neville. He's amazing. And Roy Keane is absolutely the most entertaining pundit. So in a way, everything does go towards ITV except the host.
Yeah.
But I'd give it to BBC for making Clive Tildesley and Ali McCoist their B team.
Yeah. And I also think, not to be negative, but I think this is someone that perhaps deserves a tiny bit of fun poked to them for one reason I'm going to bring up, is that Sam Matterface as lead commentator and his sort of desire to crowbar in a soundbite at every opportunity is kind of borderline insufferable. There was one moment that we really enjoyed in the fan park during the Denmark game when Denmark were down to 10
men. You would have missed this, Skull, because you weren't watching it on TV.
But so Denmark were down to 10 men because they'd made all their substitutes. This was in extra time. And a player was off the pitch with cramp. And Sam Matterface said, Denmark have one less member of staff on the pitch. And the fact that a professional commentator can call a player, which is the go-to word, Denmark have one less player. It's one word. Member of staff is three words, right? That he used it to describe that. That is enough on its own to be hilarious and relegate ITV. But immediately after that, he went on to say, they only have nine players on the pitch. And then there was this sort of little beat of silence that was far too long before he officially went, plus a goalkeeper, because he miscounted how many players were left.
Oh my god.
And he's like, come on, mate, this is the fucking semi-finals.
I actually found the member of staff thing, and I don't have an axe to grind with Sam Matterface either way, but I found the member of staff thing genuinely confusing when he said it, because I didn't know whether he was referring to players.
Yeah. Like, the kit man's gone home or something.
Yeah, I was like, sorry, does he mean like they've lost their assistant manager's been sent off or something? I don't understand what's going on.
What was baffling was that was the only reference to the fact that Denmark were down a man, and he used the wrong terminology, and then they never followed up on it because we were so confused in the fan park. It's like, what? So hold on, what's happened? Is someone injured or has someone been sent off? Like, is it a player? What an absolute dropping of the ball on the highest stage possible. Yeah. I just pictured like Tildesley sat there at home smiling away to himself like, oh yeah, you fucking prick.
Glass of red wine on the go. But I think Tildesley said himself is like, you don't want, like, you've done a good job if people don't really notice the commentary.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether there's just a lot of attention on Matterface, but you just, every like soundbite and every kind of pre-written gag and or clunky bit, you're just like, whoa, it really jars, doesn't it? Because I don't know whether you're just more.
Well, I didn't really hear much.
It.
That was the only thing I kind of clocked, really. That's the only commentary I really remember in the whole tournament. If someone said, name me a bit of commentary from Euro 2020, that would be the first thing I reached for.
Controversially, I'm not going to give it to the BBC. I do think, but like in terms of hosts, that you've got to pick Gary Lineker probably over Mark Pugach. But I thought the pundits were really good on ITV. Yeah. Really, I mean, Roy Keane doing a great impression of Roy Keane, always good. Genev, good. Ian Wright, passion. And a commentary, you know, with Tildesley and McCoist. I just think that ITV edged it. I just think they nicked it.
Well, never, there we go.
The problem is the ads, isn't it? They can never go toe to toe with the BBC because of the ads.
They've got the ads. Do you remember when the semi-finals used to be on both channels? But now they've split those up as well, haven't they?
Yeah. That surprised me, actually.
Do you have channel loyalty outside of the... Because I was thinking the other day about someone I knew when I was a kid. Their family was like just loyal to ITV. So they'd just watch ITV every night. They'd watch whatever was on ITV.
I mean, that's mad.
So they'd just turn on the TV at Emmerdale and then they'd watch ITV and then they'd go to bed. And they loved ITV so much that they'd retuned the channels on their TV so that number one was ITV.
No.
So when they turned it on, it was on ITV. Then they just left it on and then they turned it off and went to bed.
What's your mate's dad? Bob Wilson.
It's Roland Rapp. Yeah, so there we go.
Do you know what? Just like maybe as a footnote, I was speaking to someone today and their 12-year-old son had Sky Plus'd all the games and was now going back to start to watch them again.
Oh, I love that.
Like, God, that is the great thing. I was like, wow. Of course, like, kids now are just the same as I was when I was 12, like watching it, like you were a tape in Italia 90.
Yeah, yeah,
it still goes on. The next generation is here. They're enjoying it just as much.
I would 100% watch every minute of Italia 90 if someone said to me, here's the tape, and here's the files.
Famously the most boring tournament in history.
But, I watch it in a heart. You know I rewatched the England-Italy final yesterday, all of it.
What? Who are you? Pep Guardiola? When Gareth Southgate said he's going to rewatch the final, and we'll end by not talking about the final, but can I just... When Gareth Southgate said he's going to go and watch the final again, like that's his next thing, I just thought, how can you emotionally deal with that? But B, what do you reckon the context is? Where is he? Do you think him and Steve Holland are in the office? Or is he like, how do you go, right, I'm going to put myself through that 120 minutes?
Rather him than me. I can't imagine any context. I mean, how do you watch that back and not sob?
I suppose Monday morning, 10 a.m., like you're back at work, get it done before lunch. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like when a horrible bit of work's hanging over you.
Yeah, it was a tough watch, but I wanted to watch it and my memory also not be purely emotional based. I wanted to sort of have some understanding of the game because I just couldn't remember anything about, like, were we to discuss it, what happened in terms of like, oh, we scored early and then it was 1-1 and then we lost on penalties. That's all I could tell you.
Yeah.
But actually it was quite, anyway, I'm not going to be negative, but all I'm going to say is questions were raised.
I'll just say, swallow that big slab of disappointment. Close that door, lock it up. We're heading back to the 90s. Let's go retreat back into the past where we're most comfortable.
But before we go, Skull, I've got to ask,
And then you can get into this, because I realise I've got to ask. At the start of the tournament, you said you wanted to do a Gareth Southgate redemptionometer.
Yeah.
Whether he had reached redemption or not.
Yeah.
We kind of abandoned that post-Scotland. It was all getting a little bleak. Do you believe Gareth Southgate has reached redemption?
I'll offer you two words. Fucked it.
So let's just, I just want to ask you, don't just double check your answer. So in the 50 years that followed the World Cup 1966, we reached two semi-finals. And in the space of 3 years, Gareth Southgate alone has bettered the achievements of 50 years by reaching a semi and a final. And yet still, well, that's not enough for you. Have you considered giving up supporting England? Because it's never going to make you happy.
No, I will say, obviously, I think, of course, he's forgiven. And do you know what? Yeah. But part of me thinks, you know, he took us one better than Euro 96. And who knows? If we got past Germany, we might have lost to the Czech Republic in 96. We might have lost on penalties or a golden goal.
There's every chance.
I mean, the end of it is a crushing disappointment, but the collection of those brilliant moments between this first game and the last, there's more brilliant moments than there is that one sad moment.
There's probably more brilliant moments than in any other tournament we've competed in.
Oh, just even that night against Ukraine. So I heard a story on the radio today about a guy who's been shielding in lockdown. He's had his two jabs and he came out, he'd been out a week before the Ukraine game, and he said he doesn't like football, and he was walking down the street and he heard... He didn't even like football, but he saw people watching the football. He put it on the radio, and he said that he had his feed in the radio was a couple of seconds ahead of the pubs. And he said he heard England score, and then he looked over to the pub and took out his headphones and saw the whole pub together cheering people arm in arm. And he said he cried. He felt so emotional, like seeing this moment and seeing everybody back together, friends in one place, having this collective moment. And we're all searching for these collective moments after what we've all been through. And we've had plenty of them. So the collection of all those moments, how can you not say, thank you, Gareth Southgate. Thank you, England team.
Totally agree.
Thank you, football. Thank you, tournament football. See you in Qatar.
Let's get back to the 90s.
Yeah, fuck this. Back everyone in the DeLorean. Close. It's like the Ghost of Christmas Future, isn't it? You look around, you're like, oh, take me back. But, yeah.
Take me back.
Oh, God.
We'll see you in a few weeks when we'll be going back to the best decade in the history of football when England achieved far less. But for some reason, we view it with so much more respect.
But until then, don't forget, you've got Steve Bruce coming out really soon, plus another special at the end of the month. So stay tuned to Quickly Kevin. Plenty more content coming before the main series starts in August. Robbie Slater, see you later.
Hit lead! Hit lead!